L'Armée du Crime, a French film about the famous red poster case.
Yes, it's made by a director that I like very much from Marseille called Robert Guédiguian, who has Armenian ancestry. And I think what attracted him to this particular story about the resistance group centred on Paris and made up of a lot of Jews and communists, so said the Nazis.
Des Juifs polonais, hongrois, mais aussi des communistes espagnols et italiens, avec à leur tête leur chef de bande, arménien.
Is that the leader was actually somebody who had come from Armenia to France and was a leader who was academic, then got involved in action and had to continually reassess what was being asked, especially the sabotage and the deaths of German officers. And so it's a more questioning film, I think, than Max Manus, even though a lot of the activity this time in France is very similar.
I read here that it's this group of foreign partisans who defied French apathy to form their own resistance against the Nazis.
And a number of the Jewish migrants who'd come to France during the 1930s became part of this group, and they were then were looked down upon by a lot of the local French and then dismissing them as foreigners and as communists and as Jews.
I personally find the films on World War II very interesting to watch because, obviously, I wasn't around at the time, but it's a central part of our inheritance, of our cultural inheritance. Here in Italy, of course, we have many mementos of World War II, and I find they really fill up gaps in history, especially when speaking about people like Max Manus or the Red Poster case, which weren't exactly what we were studying in our history books.
That's true. Interestingly, as regards Italy, I notice these days, and one of the films in Cannes, for instance, is focusing on World War II, but the emphasis is on looking at the fascist side of things and trying to understand Mussolini, for instance.
Yes, so that was the Bellocchio film, if I'm not mistaken.
It was, yes.
Yes, yes.
Vincere. Yes, it had an actor as Mussolini up till about 1920, and then they relied on footage of Il Duce himself, mm-hmm. which looks absolutely preposterous, I must say, in close up.
E quando sarà che la grande campana suonerà a martello, è certo che tutto il popolo italiano risponderà Duce!
Vincere! Very theatrical, histrionic, and I think he knew what he was doing, his timing and looking at his audience. But the early part of the film is very interesting in presenting a young, ruthless, idealistic man who adapted and then got caught up in power.
And we have another film here about the resistance, a film that was made in Sweden, if I'm not mistaken, Flame and Citroen?
Denmark.
Except sorry.
That you're right, because in both Max Manus and Flame and Citroen, the neutral country, of course, was Sweden. And I'm amazed how easily at times people were able to move from one country to the other during the occupation. But they did, and a friend of mine who's married to a Swedish lady said, whatever the criticisms of Sweden's neutrality during the war, Sweden being neutral enabled a lot of this activity that we see in Max Manus and Flame and Citroen.
Tell us a little bit about Flame and Citroen.
Well, it's very similar, in fact, to the other ones. Again, this time Danish resistance and a lot of infiltration of the Gestapo, especially by a woman, as they say in the Matahari tradition, and it's hard to know whether she's fully on side with the resistance or whether she's saving herself by her liaison with the head of the SS. So it's a bit more personalised in some way, Flame and Citroen. Flame and Citroen, by the way, are the code names for the two central characters
right.
who are in the resistance.
They go for the Danish turncoats, as it is, and the occupying Germans themselves, don't they?
They do, and then there are some sad scenes at the end where, this time, not to spoil it, but both men die, unlike Max Manus, though a lot of Max Manus's friends were killed around him. So you've got that focus generally in the films of people who die young and are remembered heroically, and Max Manus, who lived on and had to cope with nerves and even alcoholism for many decades after the war and his experience.